The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Wraith is a patrol ship. She's been in combat against the Blood Horde. We're jumping out to meet them.
Forward hull breach. That'll mean decompression injuries in the nearest compartments beyond the breach.
For all we know, Wraith won't make it until we arrive.
What happened?
We got hauled in as casualties.
They're on the DSR.
We're going to be discovered soon. We don't fit in with these...
slaves.
Careful. You still have to do it.
In my sleep, pack leader.
Hey, Serrano, you hear about the mysterious intruders?
Intruders?
Don't move. We don't like Serranos, but we do recognize your value as a hostage. For now.
The Wraith crew members who came aboard as casualties from the forward compartments have not appeared for ID checks. I understand that Lieutenant Sweeza had a notion that they might be Blood Horde intruders.
We need to get our combat experience people over to T3 and T4. There's got to be another way to get through this.
If we can't go inside, how about outside?
Trouble. They're maneuvering. Lieutenant, I don't suppose you know whether the FTL drive is irretrievably broken.
The FTL drive.
This should be interesting.
Got a plan yet?
A two-part plan. Get control of this ship and defeat whatever's waiting for us.
For which we need warships.
If only we could Trojan horse them, the way they did to us.
It can't be done.
Do you really think our people can't figure out the controls on Blood Horde ships? I think they can. I think they will.
Prelim scan, 6. Say again, 6 Blood Horde ships.
We did it! We got ourselves a warship!
Let's get this ship going. Weapons, range in, Captain. Go ahead.
Serrano Legacy, Book 4, Once a Hero, Part 2. From Graphic Audio.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Justice League of America, Wonder Woman, Mythos.
When Hermione and Chloe read to you out of the ancient texts, daughter, did they ever read you a story about an island of men?
You really think there is an island of warriors in this ocean?
Oracle?
Batman, something big just came up. I mean that literally. An island just popped up out of nowhere.
Magic.
I hate magic.
Tonight, we set sail for Themyscira, where our weapons will taste blood.
Superman, you are possessed by Ares.
You ruined everything.
Who the hell died and made you queen, huh?
Come, Diana, puppet of Ares. One of us must die now.
I'm sorry, Mother.
Kill her!
No!
Now, the world will burn.
Copyright 2009, DC Comics, all rights reserved. Justice League of America, Wonder Woman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man. Return of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby. with performances by James Lewis, Elizabeth Jernigan, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Tim Getman, Stephen Carpenter, David Coyne, Tim Carlin, Thomas Penny, Lily Beacon, Peter Stray, Christopher Graybill, James Konacek, Eric Messner, Dylan Lynch, Nanette Savard, Michael John Casey, Ken Jackson, Scott McCormick, and M.B. Van Dorn. The man called Smoke looked at the new wanted poster tacked to a tree. This one had his likeness on it. He smiled as he looked at the shoulder-length hair and the clean-shaven face on the poster. The artist had done one dandy job, but it in no way resembled the man who now called himself Buck West. Kirby Jensen had been 16 years old when the old mountain man called Preacher hung the nickname Smoke on him. Preacher had predicted that Smoke would turn out to be a very famous man, and he had, as one of the most feared gunfighters in all the West. It was not a reputation Smoke had wanted or sought. Smoke now wore his hair short-cropped. A neat, well-trimmed beard covered his face. He no longer wore one pistol in cross-draw fashion, butt forward. He now wore his twin 44s butt back and the holsters tied down low. But he was just as fast with them as before, and that was akin to lightning. He had turned his Appaloosa 7 loose in a valley several hundred miles to the east, a valley so lovely it was nearly impossible to describe. Nicole would have loved it. Seven had gone dancing and prancing off, once more running wild and free.
Nicole.
Smoke shook his head and pushed the face of his dead wife from his mind. He turned his unreadable, cold, emotionless brown eyes to the west. The midnight black stallion he rode now stood steady under his weight. The man now called Buck stood 6 feet 2 inches barefooted. He weighed 180, all hard-packed muscle and bone. His waist was lean and his short hair ash blonde. The stallion shook his head. Smoke patted him on the neck. The stallion quieted immediately. The animal's eyes were a curious yellow-green, a vicious combination that vaguely resembled a wolf's eyes. The stallion had killed its previous owner when the man had tried to beat him with a board. Smoke had bought the horse from the man's widow, gentled him, and learned to respect the animal's feelings and moods. That stallion's name was Drifter. Smoke had carefully hidden his buckskins, caching them with his saddle and other meager possessions, in the valley where the Appaloosa 7 now grazed and ran free with his brood of mares. Smoke had carefully pushed all thoughts of the past behind him. He had spent months mentally conditioning himself not to think of himself as the gunfighter Smoke. His name was now Buck. Last names were not terribly important in the newly opened Western frontier, and it had been with a smile that Buck chose West as his last name. Buck West. Smoke was gone, for a time at least. Drifter swung his head around, looking at the man through cold, killer eyes. Buck's pack horses continued to graze. Buck looked up. He could have sworn that it was the same eagle he had seen months back after the terrible shootout at the Silver Camp not far from the Uncompahgre. At least 14 men had died under his guns that smoky, bloody day. And he had taken more than his share of lead as well. It had taken him months to fully recover. Many months back, in the southwestern corner of Wyoming, Buck had seen the first wanted poster. It had read, "Wanted, dead or alive, the outlaw and murderer Smoke Jensen, $10,000 reward. Contact the sheriff at Barry, Idaho Territory." Buck shook away the memories, clearing his head of things dead and buried and gone. But he let the smoldering coals of revenge burn on deep within his soul. He would fan those coals into white-hot flames when Brandon time arrived. and he would do the Brandon with hot lead.
All right, Drifter, let's go.
Buck was just west of the Rockies, skirting south of the Gros Ventre Range. He would, unless he hit some sort of snag, make Moose Flat in 2 days. Once at the flat, he would camp for a few days and rest Drifter. Then he would ride for Barry, Idaho Territory.
Barry is a good name, Drifter. That's exactly what I intend to do to Stratton, Richards, and Potter. Bury them.
It was early spring when Buck crossed the still ill-defined line into Idaho Territory. It was cool during the day and flat-out cold at night. He had seen several bands of Indians, but they had left him alone. He knew they'd seen him, for this was their country, and they knew it as intimately as the roots of a tree knows the earth that nurtures it. But Indians, as Preacher had once put it, were notional creatures. Buck moved slowly. He was taking his time, getting accustomed to the country, and eyeballing everything in sight. He figured if he made it out of Barry alive, he was going to need more than one back door and one hell of a good hiding place. Buck wore gray pinstripe trousers tucked into soft calfskin boots, black shirt. His hat was black, low-crowned, and wide-brimmed. His leather vest was black. His belt was silver-studded with a heavy buckle. A jacket and slicker were tied behind the saddle, over the saddlebags. A Henry repeating rifle rested in a boot, butt forward instead of the usual fashion of the butt facing back. He didn't ride in the usual slump-shouldered manner of the old mountain men, but instead sat his saddle ramrod straight, cavalry fashion. Because of this, many who saw the handsome, cold-eyed young man believed him to be ex-cavalry. He let them think it, knowing that helped to further disguise his past. He carried a two-shot Derringer in his left boot, and in his right boot, a long-bladed, double-edged dagger. That knife, in addition to the bowie knife, he wore on his gun belt behind his left-hand gun. Buck was an expert with all the weapons he carried. The legend growing around the man stated there was no faster gun hand in all the West. He was faster than the Texas gun Hardin, even more steel-nerved than Wild Bill, meaner than Curly Bill. And when he was in the right, crueler than any Apache, as relentless in a hunt as any man who ever lived. The old mountain man Preacher, who helped raise him from a lad, had taught him fist fighting and boxing and Indian wrestling. But even more importantly, Preacher had taught him how to win, teaching him that it don't make a good goddamn how you win, just win. Buck gave Drifter his head, letting the horse pick his own way at his own pace, staying close to the timber, away from open places, always edging slightly south and west. He wanted to enter the mostly uncharted center of the territory from the south. Just north of the craters of the moon, Buck would turn Drifter's nose north until he hit the Big Lost River. He would follow that through some of the most beautiful and wild country in the territory. He would then track the Big Lost for a time, then head more north than west until he reached the new town of Chalice. There, he would resupply and head north, following the Salmon River for about 35 miles. Barry was located about midway between the Salmon and the town of Tendoy. If Buck had his way, the town of Barry would soon cease to exist. It would be several more years before the toll road would be started between Chalice, reaching to Bonanza, with the spur to the Salmon. Only then would the big-scale silver mining at Bay Horse get underway. But that was the future, and this was now. And Buck was not heading for Barry to pan for gold, search for silver, or start a ranch. And he really didn't care all that much if he died doing what he'd set out to do, just so long as he got it done. The men now living and prospering in and around Barry had directly killed his brother. They had sent out the men who had killed his father, too, raped, tortured, and murdered Buck's wife, Nicole, killed his baby son, and killed his best friend and mentor, the old mountain man, Preacher. And then they had done their cruel best to kill the man who now called himself Buck West. Stratton, Potter, and Richard had thrown their best gun hands at the young man. He'd killed them all. Thus far, Stratton, Potter, and Richards had failed to stop Buck.
And Buck? Well, Buck had no intention of failing. Buck was being followed. He had yet to catch a glimpse of his pursuers, but he knew someone was tracking him, knew it by that itchy feeling between his shoulder blades. Twice in as many days he had stopped and spent several hours checking his back trail, but to no avail. Whoever or whatever it was coming along behind him was laying way back, several miles at least, and they were very good at tracking. They had to be, because Buck had not spotted them, and Preacher had taught the young man well. Mid-afternoon of his second day at Gray's Lake, Buck watched Drifter's ears prick up, the eyes growing cautious as the stallion lifted his head. Buck knew company was coming.
Hello to camp!
If you're friendly, come on in. If you want trouble, I'll give you all you can handle.
Buck knew the grizzled old man slowly riding toward his small fire, but he couldn't immediately put a name to him.
Yeah.
The man, anywhere between 65 and 105, dismounted and helped himself to coffee and pan bread and venison. He ate slowly, his eyes appraising Buck without expression. Finally, he wiped his hands on greasy buckskins and poured another cup of coffee, and then settled back on the ground.
Don't talk none yet. Just listen. You be the pup Preacher taken under his wing some years back. Yeah, I knowed it was you. And he's been up some on your head, boy. You're about $30,000 on you now. You must have 100 men after you. Hard men, most of them. You good, boy, but you ain't that good. Sooner or later, you'll slip up and get tired and have to rest, and then they'll get you.
Uh-huh. And the point of all this?
I told you to hush up and listen. The goddamn farmers and such run us old boys toward the west. Trapping's fair, but ain't no market to speak of. Ten of us got a camp just out of Cashel Peak in the Sawtooth. Getting plumb boring, so we figured on heading north in about a week. Up toward Barry. Now, we're gonna take our time. Ain't no point in getting in no ladder.
The old man got to his feet and walked toward his horses.
Might see up there, boy. Thanks for the grub.
What are you called?
Tennessee.
You're not any better looking than the last time I saw you.
Ain't supposed to be. Now get out and get gone. You got trouble on your back trail.
Yeah, I know.
God damn you, worse than Preacher. Can't tell neither one of you nothing.
Then he was gone back into the timber. 15 minutes later, Buck had saddled Drifter, cinched down the packs on his pack animal, and was gone, riding northwest. Later that afternoon, staying below the crest of a hill, Buck ground-reined Drifter and scanned his back trail. It was then that he caught the first glimpse of those following him. Four riders, riding easy and seemingly confident. He removed a brass spyglass from his saddlebags and pulled it fully extended, sighting the riders in. He didn't recognize any of them, but he could see they were all heavily armed. Hard cases, every one of them. Buck looked back over his shoulder toward the west. He smiled at what he saw. Blackfoot. And the way they were traveling, the gun hands and the warlike Blackfoot would soon come face to face. Now, the Blackfoot had not always hated the white man. Long before the Lewis and Clark expedition, the Blackfoot had been in contact with the French-Canadian trappers of the Hudson's Bay Company. For the most part, they'd gotten along. But in 1806, when the Lewis and Clark expedition split up, Clark turning southward to explore the Yellowstone River, Lewis taking the Blackfoot branch as the best route to the Missouri, Lewis had encountered a band of Blackfoot. No one knows who started the fight or why, and the journals of Lewis don't say. But the battle had a long-lasting effect. Since the Blackfoot were the most powerful and warlike tribe in the Northwest, their hatred following the battle closed both rivers to pilgrim travel. Buck was puzzled by why so many Blackfoot were in this part of the territory, somewhat off their beaten track. He concluded, after looking them over through his spyglass, that they were a war party, and had been quite successful, judging from the scalps on their rifles and coos sticks, and wound into their horses' manes. Buck smiled as the Blackfoot spotted the white men first. Within seconds, the Blackfoot had vanished, the war party splitting up, lying in silent wait to spring the deadly ambush.
Come on, Drifter. Them old boys are about to have a real bad day, and we don't want no part of it.
About an hour after the engine attack, an old man left his hiding place, which was very close to where Buck had first spotted the four riders. Leading a pack animal, he slowly rode after Buck. He was in no hurry. He knew where Buck was going, and he knew what Buck planned to do. 1874 and most of Idaho Territory was no place for the faint-hearted, the lazy, the coward, or the shirker. 1874 Idaho Territory was pure frontier, as wild and woolly as the individual wanted to make it. It would be three more long, bloody, and heartbreaking years for the Nez Perce Indians before Chief Joseph would lead his demoralized tribe on the 1,300-mile retreat to Canada. But in 1874, the Indians were still fighting all over Idaho Territory, including the Bannocks and the Shoshones. It was a time for wary watchfulness. It had been 14 years since an expedition led by Captain Elias D. Pierce of California had discovered gold on the Orofino Creek, a tributary of the Clearwater River. It wasn't much gold, but it was gold. Thousands had heard the cry and the tug of easy riches, and thousands had come. They'd poured into the state, expecting to find nuggets laying everywhere. Many of them had never been heard from again. As Buck rode through the southern part of the state now, heading for the black and barren lava fields called the Craters of the Moon, even here he was able to see the mute heartbreak of the gold seekers. The mining equipment lying abandoned and rusting, the dredges and dry creek beds. Now, in early summer, a time when the creeks and rivers were starting to recede, Buck spotted along the banks a miner's boot and a pan. He wondered what stories they could tell. He rode on, always checking his back trail. He had a vague, uneasy feeling that he was still being followed, but he could never spot his follower. And that was cause for alarm, for Buck, even though still a young man, was an expert in surviving in the wilderness. He skirted south of the still unnamed village of Idaho Falls, a place one man claimed openly wore the worst side out. Buck rode slowly but steadily, coming up on the south side of the Big Lost, north of the Craters of the Moon. He stopped at a trading post at what would someday become a resort town called Arco. Inside the dark, dirty place, filled with skins and the smell of rot-gut whiskey, Buck bought bacon and beans and coffee from a scar-faced clerk. The clerk smelled as bad as his store looked. Buck's eyes flicked over several wanted posters tacked to the wall. There he was again.
Last one of them I seen had $10,000 reward on it.
Mm-hmm. And he's been upped.
Man could do a lot with $30,000.
Have any trouble coming from the east?
How'd you know I come from the east?
That's the way you rode in.
Seen some Blackfoot 2-3 days ago, but they didn't see me. I didn't hang around long.
Smart.
You see four men riding together?
Yeah, and so did the Blackfoot.
Crap. You reckon the Indians got them?
I reckon so. Didn't hang around to see.
You mean you just rode off without lending a hand?
One more wouldn't have made any difference.
Then I reckon that makes you a coward, don't it?
Smoke eyeballed the man. Two guns wore low and tied down, the leather hammer thongs off.
Either that or careful.
You know what I think, Slick? I think it makes you yellow.
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think you don't know your asshole from your mouth.
I think I'll just kill you for that.
Bet or fold.
The man's hands dipped down.
Good God. I ain't never even seen the draw.
Any of you other boys want to ante up in this game?
Hell no. He were my partner, but he were in the wrong this time. I lay claim to his pockets.
Suits me. He have a name?
Big Jack, from up Montana way. Never spoke no last name. Who you be?
Buck West. I've been tracking that damn Smoke Jensen for the better part of 6 months.
Us too. I would ask if you wanted some company, but you look like you ride alone.
That's right.
Name's Jerry. This here's Carl and Paul. Don't reckon you'd give us a hand digging a hole for Jack.
I don't reckon so. No.
Can't much blame you.
Bury him out back. Deep. If he smells any worse or dead than alive, I'll have to move my place of business.
Later, the same men stood outside and watched as Buck rode away, ramrod straight in the saddle.
That young feller is faster than greased lightning. Faster than Jesse, I bet you.
Ain't no faster than Wild Bill, though.
Damn it, Paul, Wild Bill ain't shit. Well,
that's a bunch of crap. I suppose you're gonna tell us Wild Bill didn't clean up at Abilene.
He sure as hell didn't, Carl. I know. I were there. Me and Phil Coe. I seen Wild Bill shoot him with a pair of derringers after Phil done put his gun away. Then he turned around and shot the marshal, Mike Williams. Wild Bill better not ever try to brace that there Buck West. Buck's a bad one, boys. Cold-eyed as a snake.
It would be almost exactly 2.5 years later, on the afternoon of August 2, 1876, in Deadwood, South Dakota, when a cross-eyed, busted-nosed wino named Jack McCall would blow out Hickok's brains as he studied his poker hand of aces and eights. Wild Bill would be 39 years old.
I think Potter ought to know about this here Buck West. Think I'll take me a ride later on.
We'll tag along.
Late that afternoon, a stranger rode up to the trading post and walked inside. He cradled a Henry repeating rifle in the crook of his left arm.
I seen the fresh grave out back. That a friend of yours?
Hell no.
Man ought to have a marker on his grave, don't you think?
I'll get around to it one of these days. Maybe. Big Jack was all they called him.
Well, that's better than nothing. I don't reckon he died of the natural causes, huh?
Not likely. You gonna talk all day or buy a drink of whiskey?
There you go. Not buy a drug.
Oh, and then some. No, sir. That Big Jack fancied himself a gun hand, I guess, but he done run up on a ring-tailed tutor this day. Fellow by the name of Buck West. You heard of him?
Oh, seems I have some bears. Bounty hunter, I think. But he's a bad man to mess with.
Tell me. Why, he drew so fast a feller couldn't even see the blur. Big Jack's hand had barely touched the butt of his .36 when the lead hit him in the center of the chest. Dead before he hit the ground.
That fast, eh?
Oh, Lord have mercy, yes. Ain't I seen you afore? You mountain man, ain't you? Ain't so many of you old boys left.
No, not me. I'm retired from the East. I come out here to pass my golden years amid the peace and tranquility of the high lonesome.
And you just as full of shit now as you was 40 years ago, you old goat.
Well, you just keep that information inside that head of yours and off your tongue. You do that and I won't tell nobody I know where Rowdy J. Kelly retired to. You still got that money on your head, Rowdy.
Man, I heard you got killed last year, preacher. Shot all to hell and gone over to Needle Mountains.
Yeah, well, part of it's true. I got all dressed up in my finest buckskins and rode an old nag up into the hills. And truth be told, I did lay me down to die. Lordy, but I was hurting some. The longer I lay there, the madder I got, though. Finally, I got up and said, to hell with this, and I rode off. Found me one of my engine kids, or grandkids, or, well, I ain't real sure which one it was, but she took care of me. You keep hush about all this now, you hear?
I never saw you afore this day.
Buck had left the trading post and followed the Big Lost River north. He had pushed his horses, rested them, then pushed them hard again, putting as many miles as possible between himself and the trading post. He had a hunch the men back at the trading post would be hell-bent for Barry. They were bounty hunters, he had known from the look. He smiled grimly at what they might think if they knew that they had been within touching distance of the man called Smoke Jensen. At dusk, Buck found himself a hidden vantage point where he could watch the trail and settled in for the evening. He built a hand-sized fire and fixed bacon and beans and coffee. Using tinder dry wood, the fire was virtually smokeless. He kept his coffee warm over the coals. Just at dusk, he spotted three riders. Buck watched as they passed his hiding place, heading north toward the trading post at McKay. He figured he'd head out at dawn, ford the Big Lost, then head for the eastern banks and the Lost Paver Range. He didn't want to travel those flats that stretched for miles before reaching Chalice, preferring to remain in the timber. But he wanted to take his time getting to Barry for two reasons. One, he wanted the story of the shootout at the trading post to reach the right ears, namely Potter, Stratton, and Richards. Men like that could always use another gun, and Buck intended to be that other gun. Two, he still had that nagging sensation of being followed, and it annoyed him. He knew it. He felt it. Someone was back there. He just didn't know who. The 80-mile ride from the trading post to Chalice passed slowly, and Buck took his time, enjoying the sights and new country. Buck was a man who loved the wilderness, loved its great beauty, loved the feeling of being alone, although he knew perfectly well he certainly was not alone. There were eagles and hawks who soared and glided above him, the playful camp robber birds, the squirrels and bears and puma, the breathless beauty of wildflowers in early summer. No, he wasn't alone in the wilderness. Alone was just a state of mind. Buck had only to look around him for company, compliments of nature. Suddenly, sensing more than hearing movement, Buck cut toward the west and into the deep timber of the Lost River range.
Easy there, Trevor.
Then he spotted him. It was a war party, and a big one. From this distance, he couldn't risk using his spyglass, for it was afternoon and he was facing west, and he didn't want to risk sunlight bouncing off the lens. He could only guess the tribe. Buck counted the braves, 30 of them, all painted up and looking for trouble.
Damn.
Were they going to make camp? Buck didn't know, but he knew it was awfully early for that. To the south, Boré Peak, almost 13,000 feet high, loomed up stark in the high lonesome. The highest peak in the state, Boré dominated matters for miles. Buck sat it out for several hours, watching and waiting out the long minutes. Then, as quickly as they had come, the engines were gone. Buck lay still for another 10 minutes, mulling the situation over in his mind. The war party had built no fires, either cook or signal. They had met with no other engines. Why they had stopped, Buck had no damn idea. But he knew one thing. He damn sure wasn't going to head out after him. Whichever direction the war party had taken, he planned to head in the other direction.
Let's go, Drifter.
Buck found where the war party had hidden south, so he swung Drifter's head and pointed his nose north, toward the muddy, brawling town of Chalice, located just to the northwest of the Salmon River. Buck would hang around Chalice for a few days, listening to the miners talk and attempting to get the feel of what the townspeople thought of Barry, some 35 miles north and slightly east. Chalice was one short business street, more saloons than anything else, with tents and shacks and a few permanent-looking homes to the north. Most of the shacks appeared to have been tossed into their location by some giant crapshooter. Buck stabled his horses. He wasn't worried about anyone stealing Drifter, because the stallion would kill anyone who entered his stall. And taking his Henry repeating rifle, a change of clothing, and his saddlebags, Buck walked toward the town's hotel. After checking in, Buck went to a barber shop and took a hot bath, a young Chinese man keeping the water hot with additional buckets of water. After Buck had soaked off the weeks of dirt and fleas, he dressed in dark trousers, white shirt, and vest. He left his boots to be shined and settled in the barber chair.
Short, and trim a beard.
Passing through?
Could be. Mostly just drifting.
The barber had noted Buck's tied down guns. Being an observant man, and one raised on the frontier, he knew a fast gun when he saw one. And this man sitting in his chair was a gun hand. He was no tin horn. The butts of his 44s were worn smooth from handling, with no marks in the wood to signify kills. Only a tin horn did that. And tin horns, well, they didn't last long in the West. But there was something else about this young man. Confidence. That's what it was, and a cold air about him. Not unfriendly, but cold.
Well, if it's silver you're hunting, big strike north and east of here, close to the Lemhi River.
Not for me. Too much work involved in that.
Uh-huh. You handy with M44s?
Some folks say so.
You head north from here. Follow the salmon until the river cuts through the Lemhi Range. Then head east. You'll come up on the town of Barry.
Hell of a name for a town.
It's right proper, considering the size of their boot hill. You'll see.
Now, why would I want to go to some place called Barry?
Maybe you don't. Then again, you might find work up there.
Might do that. How's the law in this town?
Tough when they have to be. Long as it's a fair fight, they won't bother you.
I never shot no one in the back.
You don't have that look about you, that's for sure.
Where's the best place to eat?
Marie's place, just up the street. Beef and beans and apple pie. Good portions, too. Reasonable.
They weren't just good portions. They were huge. The food was simple but well-prepared, and the apple pie was delicious. Buck pushed the empty plate away and settled back, leaning back in his chair, his back to a wall. He lingered over a third cup of coffee and watched the activity in the street through the window. He was waiting for the marshal or sheriff to make his appearance, and it didn't take long.
Passing through?
Might stay 2 or 3 days. I'm in no big hurry to get anywhere.
You got a name?
I'm not wanted.
I don't answer my question.
Buck West.
It was then that Buck placed the man, finally. Dooley. He'd been a lawman over in Colorado for years. A straight, no-nonsense lawman, but a fair one. Dooley pointed up the street.
Them houses with paint on them beginning at the end of the street is off boundaries for drifters. Decent folks live there. The Doss houses is on the other end of the street. The road out of town is that-a-way. Feel free to take that as soon as possible.
I don't intend to cause you or your man any trouble, Marshal.
But you will. You just got that air about you.
You're a very suspicious man, Marshal.
Goes with the job, son. You know, you sure look familiar.
I just have a friendly face.
Uh-huh. I'm sure that's it. Keep it friendly.
Sure, Marshal. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Hey, I'm talking to you! I said, are you gonna drink that beer? Or stand there and look at it with your stupid face hanging out?
Damn.
As Buck turned and faced the two men in the saloon, it occurred to him that maybe the marshal might have been right. He had entered the saloon, ordered a beer, and had nursed it for only about 15 minutes before this cowboy with the loud and arrogant mouth began needling him.
Boy, you better talk to me!
I intend to drink this beer in my own good time. Not that it's any of your business.
That's Harry Carson, stranger.
Is that supposed to mean something to me, barkeep?
And his buddy is Wade Phillips? Huh?
Really? Is his buddy an asshole, too?
The town's deputy leaned against the bar, silently watching the show unfold before him. Carson and Phillips were both loudmouthed troublemakers, but he felt he had pegged this young, tall man just right. If he was correct in his assumption, Carson and Phillips would never pick another fight after tonight. The deputy slipped out of the line of possible gunfire and sipped his beer.
What did you just say, boy?
Go on, Carson. Back off. Drink your drink and leave me be.
You got a smart mouth.
Upon entering the saloon, Buck had slipped the hammer thongs off his 44s.
I'm not looking for trouble, Phillips. But if I'm pushed into it, so be it.
Talks fancy, don't he? Yeah, and got them fancy guns on, too. But I bet you he ain't got the sand in him to duke it out.
Buck's smile was faint. He had pegged the man accurately. Both men probably realized that neither of them could beat Buck in a gunfight, so they would push him into a fight with fists and boots. And if he didn't fight him at their own game, he'd be branded a coward. It was the bully's way. Buck took off his gun belt and laid it on the bar. Spotting the deputy, he slid the hardware down the bar to him.
Look after those, will you please?
The deputy nodded. Buck calmly raised his beer to his lips. Buck smashed the mug into Carson's face.
Hey, you can't!
The fight was over. Buck turned around. Marshal Dooley had joined his deputy.
Any law against a fair fight, Marshal? It was 2 against 1.
And they were outnumbered at those odds. No, West. There's no law against it. Yet. But someday there will be.
Buck retrieved his guns and buckled them around his waist.
Not as long as there are people so stupid as to place and praise physical brawn over the capacity to reason.
Who are you, West? You're no drifting gun hand. You got intelligence.
I'm a man who likes to read, think, and reason. That's who I am. Good night, Marshal.
Buck spent the next 3 days loafing and listening around Chalice. He read a dozen six-month-old newspapers, then bought a well-worn book of verse by Percy Blythe Shelley and began reading that. He played a little poker, too, winning some, losing some, and ending up breaking about even. Twice he saw a couple of the most disreputable-looking men he'd seen in years. He knew they were mountain men, and he knew they were checking on him. The men had to be close to 70 years old, but they still looked like they could wrestle a grizzly bear and probably win. Some of the so-called good people of the community sniffed disdainfully at the sight of the buckskin-clad old men, snubbing them, having highly uncomplimentary things to say about them. Buck kept his mouth shut. He recalled the words of that fella called Henry David Thoreau. If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away. But Buck knew there was more to it than that, and he silently cursed his lack of education, vowing to read and retain more words of wisdom. He had left his precious books back at the cabin in that lovely, lonely meadow where he had buried his wife and son, Nicole and Arthur. He knew someday he'd return to that valley if he lived through his mission. Now Buck leaned back in his chair on the boardwalk, his back to a storefront, and pondered away a few moments, wondering why so many people built false and unworthy idols. These old mountain men were in some cases like military men, looked down on and cursed until the need for them arises. Then, as that moment passes, they are once more shunted aside. It was like those signs Buck had been seeing on some stores, "No Irish wanted here." Buck's philosophical meanderings were shoved aside as his eyes focused on the two men walking slowly down the center of the dirt main road.
Phillips and Carson.
Both of them wore two pistols. Their hands were near the pistols, ready to draw. Then Buck remembered. Marshal Dooley and his deputy had left that morning to ride out to a ranch. Something about rustling.
Get out the street, West!
Front doors and windows facing the street banged shut. Gunfights were nothing new to these people.
It doesn't have to be this way.
You ready to die, boy?
Buck cut his eyes for just an instant. Standing in front of a saloon was one of the men from back at the trading post. What was his name now? Jerry. Yeah, Jerry, Big Jack's buddy. And standing a few yards from him, an old buckskin-dressed mountain man. The mountain man, old and big and still solid, cradled a Henry repeating rifle in the crook of one massive arm. Buck could tell the men facing him were nervous. Since he had whipped them that night, Buck had heard stories about Carson and Phillips. They were thugs and ne'er-do-wells, shiftless troublemakers. Buck had heard that the pair had used guns before, but were not gun hands per se. They were back shooters, cowards. But of course, as Buck knew well, most bullies are cowards. Buck stood in the center of the street, standing tall and straight, his big hands rough and work-hardened, close to his guns. Buck could see the sweat on the men's faces. He knew he could not afford to draw first. Even though the men were trash, this was their town. Buck was the stranger. They had to draw first in order for it to be called self-defense, even if it was 2-on-1. Buck stood quietly, waiting.
You had no call to scar us up like you did. You don't fight fair.
A thought passed through Buck's head. These men were mentally ill-equipped to face the day-to-day struggles of living peacefully. But was that Buck's fault? Was he and others like him responsible for Carson and Phillips and others like him? Every man was put here on this earth with the capability to learn to reason. These men and others like him
didn't want to learn. Therefore, it lie on their head, no one else's. Now, we come into this world naked and helpless and squalling. Sure we do. But we are equal to the task of learning.
Ain't you got no tongue? Can't you talk?
Well, what do you want me to say?
Beg, and we'll let you turn tail and run on out of here.
I beg to no man.
Then die!
Buck let him clear leather before he drew his right hand 44. Phillips was dead before he hit the floor. Carson had not drawn. The man's face was chalky white. He watched as Buck holstered his 44. Buck waited patiently.
Back off, Carson. Just turn around and walk away and it's over. How about it?
The hell with you!
Buck walked across the street to his chair and sat back down. People began streaming out of offices and stores and saloons. They gathered around the fallen pair of would-be gun hands. They looked at Buck, sitting calmly on the boardwalk, waiting for the town marshal.
When are you gonna tell the boy he's still alive and kicking?
The man was called Bear Tooth because he didn't have a tooth in his head, and hadn't had in 40 years. No one even knew what his Christian name was, and it wasn't really a polite question to ask.
Well, might not never. He thinks I'm dead. Might be best to keep it that way. I'm only going in if and when he needs help.
He'll need help. Plenty guns up a belly, and they're all going to be aimed at your friend.
Dupree had drifted up from New Orleans in the late 20s.
Now, you ain't seen Smoke. Excuse me, Buck. You ain't seen Buck get into action. He's hell on wheels, boy. I mean, he's the best I ever seen, and I seen them all.
Don't start lying, preacher.
Gray Bull was a mountain of a man. It took a mule to pack him around.
What do you think about a Nighthawk?
Whatever the hell that means. Damn engine ain't said 15 words in the 50 years I've been knowing him.
Might make the lad feel better if he'd known you was still breathing.
The old man Pugh, spelled P-U-G-H, was more commonly referred to as P-U. He hated water.
Then again, it might make him irritable. He probably already said all sorts of kind words about you. And thinking of enough kind words about you to bury you probably took him the better part of a month.
P.U., would you mind changing positions just a tad?
Here, okay.
A little bit more.
Here.
More. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Right there. Yep, now don't move, P.U. God, why the hell don't you take a bath? I mean, you'd make a vulture puke.
Well, if you ask me...
Nobody asked you, Audie. Hell, nobody can see you.
Audie was a midget, about 3.5 feet tall, and about 3.5 feet wide. He was one large amount of trouble in a very compact package.
As I was saying before your rudeness took precedence...
Audie had taught school in Pennsylvania before the wanderlust hit him, and he had struck out for the West on a Shetland pony. When the Injuns had seen him, they laughed so damn hard they forgot to kill him.
I think it best that Preacher keep his anonymity for the period preceding our arrival in Berry. Should Preacher reveal his living, breathing self to the young man, it might prove so traumatic as to be detrimental to Jensen's well-being.
What the hell's fire you shaking your head about, you dumb engine? You don't know no more what he said than us'uns do. Whatever Audie said, I agree with him.
Matt was a black man, big and mean and one-eyed. Matt was probably the youngest man present, and he was at least 65. He had lost his eye during a fight with an angry mountain lion. Matt had finally broken the puma's back.
Good God, Audie. Can't you talk American? What the hell'd you just say?
Deadlead had earned his nickname from being a crack shot with a pistol. Like most of the mountain men, no one knew what his Christian name was.
I say we break camp and wander on up towards Berry.
Powder Pete was so called because of his expertise with explosions.
Hell, old as we is, some of us might not make the trip if we wait much longer.
Yep, I go for that myself, Pete. What do you say, Nighthawk?
I'll not have this town filled up with would-be gun hands looking to make themselves a reputation. Get your truck together and hit the trail, West.
Friendly place you have here, Marshal.
Yes, it is. It's just that something about you invites trouble. I know you didn't start the fight. And I understand from talking with folks who watched out their windows that you even tried slightly to back away from it. That's good, but not good enough. Clear out, West.
In the morning, soon enough?
Yeah, all right. But stay out of the saloons tonight, and be gone by dawn.
Smoke didn't object to being asked to leave town. Hell, he didn't blame the law. It was time to be moving on anyway, and there was no point in delaying his departure until morning. Buck was getting that closed-in feeling, and so was Drifter. Last time he'd looked in on the animal, Drifter had rolled his eyes and tossed his head, and then proceeded to kick in the back of his stall. Buck headed now for the stable.
Ready to go, Drifter?
Drifter kicked in what was left of his stall.
Yeah, I guess so. Let's get.
The band of old men met Lobo at the base of Gray Rock Mountain, about halfway between the Sawtooth Wilderness area and Chalice. It was rumored that Lobo had once lived with wolves. He briefed the men on what he had seen in town.
Faster than greased lightning. I never seen nothing like it afore in my life. And the lad didn't even blink an eye doing it.
There you are, see? I done told you.
Don't start bragging, preacher. It's bad enough just having to look at you.
Did the law run him out of town, Lobo?
Don't know. Didn't hang around to see. Law might ask him to leave, but if that there boy gets his back up, there ain't nobody gonna run him nowheres.
Well, let's us just sorta amble on toward the northeast. Now, if I know Smoke, and I do, cause I raised him, he'll take his time getting to Barry. He'll lay back in the timber for a day or so and look the situation over. So we'll cross the Lost River Range and head across the flats and turn north, make camp in the narrow south of Barry. I know me some flatheads live just west of the Bitterroot. Now, once we set up camp, I'll take me a ride over to the Divide, palaver with them some. They'll be our eyes and ears. That sound all right to you boys?
I agree, Nighthawk. Quite inventive.
Buck crossed the salmon to the east bank and began following the river north. He stayed on the fringe of the timber that made up the northern edge of the Lemhi Range. He would follow the river for about 35 miles before cutting to the east for about 10 miles. That should put him on the outskirts of Barry. Once there, he would make camp south of the town and look it over. A dozen mountain men with over 600 years of survival and fighting experience between them were riding hard just south of Chalice. Their rifles held across saddle horns, fringed buckskins and animal hide caps, and brightly colored shirts and jackets and sashes. The last of the mountain men were returning for one more fight. They were riding hard to help the youngest mountain man if he needed it. One of their own, a young man who had chosen the lonely call of the wilderness as home. A young man who preferred the high lonesome over the towns and the cities. A young man they had taken under their wing, helped raise, imparting to him the wisdom of the wilderness, hopefully perpetuating a way of life that so-called civilized people now sneered at and rejected. This gathering, this aging motley crew, knew that they were the last, the very last, of a select breed of men. After this ride, never again would so many gather. But hopefully, just maybe, their young protege would live on, known for the rest of his life as the Last Mountain Man. The town of Barry, with a population of about 500, sat on a road first roughed out by Mormon settlers in the mid-1850s. Barry had a bank, probably the best school in that part of the county, too, a large two-story building. It also had a large mercantile store, a weekly newspaper, several saloons and cafes, a large hotel, a sheriff, several deputies,
a jail, a leather shop, and several other businesses, including a whorehouse located discreetly outside the town. The town also boasted several churches. A handful of ranches lay around the town, and a few spreading mines as well. Nearly all of it was owned by three men. You guessed it. Stratton, Potter, and Richards. Barry also had a volunteer fire department. They were going to need a fire department before Buck was through. The business district of Barry was three blocks long on both sides of the wide street. It was down that street that Buck rode at mid-morning. He had camped some miles from the town, watching the one road for 2 days. The stagecoach rolled in every other day. Wagons bringing supplies had rolled by. Peddlers and tinkers and snake oil salesmen had rattled past, too. The first thing Buck noticed in his slow ride up the street was a number of gun hands lounging about on the boardwalk, and not just in front of the saloons, neither. A couple seemed to have taken up residence in front of the bank as well. Buck guessed there had been some attempts to hold up the place. Or perhaps the big three were just cautious men. Buck located the livery stable and arranged a stall for Drifter.
Son, I'd advise you not to go in a Drifter's stall.
Yes, sir.
Taking his personal gear and his rifle, Buck stashed the rest of his gear in Drifter's stall. Then he headed for the hotel. As he walked, he passed by a very pretty, dark-haired, hazel-eyed young woman. He smiled at her, and she blushed back. Buck paused and watched her walk on toward the edge of town. Buck crossed the street to better watch her and saw her push open the gate on a small picket fence and walk up onto the porch of a small house. Then she disappeared from view.
Nice.
Sure is.
Buck slowly turned around to face the sheriff and one of his deputies. Neither one of them would win any prizes for good looks.
Sheriff Reese, this is Rogers, one of my deputies. I don't know you.
Buck West.
Ah, now I know you. The gun hand.
Some say I am.
Gonna be in town long?
That depends.
On what?
On how fast I get rested up, resupplied, and find out more about this Smoke Jensen, and how I can go about collecting the reward money.
First you have to catch him, hombre.
I'll catch him.
Reese stared at Buck. Something about this tall young man was just slightly unsettling, even for a man like Dan Reese, who had worked on both sides of the law nearly all his life. Reese had worked the Hoot Owl trails many times in many states, ducking and dodging the law that sought him. Beside him, Deputy Rogers stood and glared at Buck, forming an instant dislike for the young man. Rogers was big and solid, including that space between his ears. He was not just dumb, he was stupid and very dangerous. He had killed more times than he could remember, with fists, guns, knives, or clubs.
You stay away from Sally Reynolds. I got my eyes on her, and she likes me.
Buck cut his eyes to the deputy. He doubted that even Roger's own mother liked him very much.
Sally Reynolds is one of our school teachers. She wouldn't want nothing to do with no damn bounty hunter like you, West.
You're probably right, Sheriff. Anything else I need to know about Barry and its citizens?
Stay out of trouble.
Buck turned his back to the men and walked on up the boardwalk toward the hotel.
I don't like him. I think I'll kill him.
I don't like him either. But you don't do nothing till you're told to do it. Stratton said if he showed, just keep an eye on him. You understand that, Rogers?
Yeah.